And is everyone back?
You're all set.
Here we go. I'm ready to go set. Mr. Trevelco, you know what crop rotation is, don't you?
Yes.
It involves the planting of different crops over multiple years, over multiple properties, doesn't it?
Yes.
And it's a practice which maintains the sustainable nature of the soil resource, isn't it?
I don't really know that, but yes, okay.
Oh, have you read any of the evidence for the Pukekohe Vegetable Growers Association?
Yes.
Do you recall that?
It was more the word sustains that I was wondering about. So you're saying sustains it for vegetable production?
Yes, but it also helps sustain the soil resource that's being used so that it remains in a healthy state, doesn't it?
So, yes.
And it has benefits for the structure of the soil, doesn't it?
Yes.
And good for pest control as well, isn't it?
Well, I understand that, but I'm no soil scientist. I don't know these things really, but yes.
No, but putting your planning hat on, if you're trying to set a regulatory direction, you'd want to know a fair bit about the thing that you're subjecting to regulation, wouldn't you?
I understand that crop rotation is very important for the health and well-being of vegetables.
Health and well-being of?
Of vegetable growing.
Yes, and of the environment which it uses.
Yes, okay.
Well, you say okay. Do I take from
well,
that?
I don't really know to what extent rotation protects the health of the environment. So
right.
I'm not entirely agreeing with that.
But if it turned out that it actually, if the science of it was that it did have those benefits for the environment, would that be relevant for you in designing the right policy settings?
Yes.
And as well as, well, do you understand that from a grower's perspective, crop rotation is fundamental to commercial vegetable production?
Yes.
Can't really happen without it, can it?
As I understand it, yes.
And you know that doing this crop rotation is majorly costly for growers?
I don't know what the costs are.
Well, have you read the evidence of Mr. Ford for Horticulture New Zealand?
Well, yes, but I don't remember all the details, I'm sorry.
Right. But you'd accept that even though it is majorly costly, growers do it, because it's necessary for CBP and for soil health.
Yes.
And you recall Mr. Scarsbrook for the council, who is a scientist, accepting that it actually has benefits for, rotation has benefits for sediment discharge as well. Remember that?
Yes, I remember him saying that if it's spelled and planted, then it helps to retain the sediment on the land, yes.
Yeah, and you've got no reason to doubt that?
No.
No. And terms of the challenges facing vegetable growers, are you aware that even large growers only own about half of the area that they crop?
I don't know the figures. I'm happy to accept that.
And did you read in the evidence for my clients that they tend to lease the rest?
Yes.
And did you appreciate that what growers do is constantly change the area that they're having to lease?
Yes.
And so you're going to need a multiple of the actual growing area to be available to enable CVP.
Yes.
And you'd expect individual growers' operations to move across various parcels of land over time, wouldn't you?
Yes.
And do you know that sometimes that happens between parcels of land?
Yes, I assume so.
Do you know that it happens across sub-catchments as well?
I assume it does sometimes, yes.
And do you know that growers at least are telling you in the evidence that they've filed, they don't really operate at the sub-catchment scale? Did you know that?
I don't know to what extent, but I can accept that, yes.
Well, it's sensible, isn't it? Because they rotate crops across land, across the entire FMU.
I don't know how wide they rotate their crops.
Well,
but I accept that it could be across catchment boundaries, sub-catchment boundaries, yes.
Yes, and did you know that their evidence is that restricting rotation of their crops at the sub-catchment level actually impedes effective crop rotation?
Yes, I can accept that.
And you don't have any reason to doubt that evidence?
No.
And that's from the grower's perspective, but if we think from an environmental perspective, can you see how if the area that you're allowed to rotate in is too small, that might actually have negative environmental effects as well?
Potentially.
Well, it could be because it'll be likelier, won't it, that you're going to be intensifying vegetable production into a smaller geographical area.
Well, yes, but I'm not saying that. I don't agree that that's what PC1 is creating or doing.
You don't think that, for instance, under the controlled activity rule, it restricts you to sticking to the within the sub-catchment?
Yes, it does, and that's right. As defined as existing CVP is defined for a controlled activity rule. Yes.
Yes. Well, I know it's defined, but given that that rule does constrain the grower to rotating within the sub-catchment,
yes.
Can you see how that might tend to intensify vegetable production in a way that wouldn't happen if it was at the FMU scale?
Well, I'm assuming that if it happens that is intensifying or preventing rotation to the extent that, that the growers needed to go in order to achieve protection of the soil, then you would need to expand it beyond that, in which case you would need to go for a discretionary activity consent to do that.
Yes, but you're saying under your PC1, that's not something you could do as a controlled activity.
That's right.
Sticking, if they're just sticking within the sub-catchment, are you overall comfortable that there's unlikely to be a major land use change, at least in that situation?
That's the intention. The intention is that if it's growing in an area where it's been used before.
Yes.
Then that's called existing, and if it needs to go beyond that, it needs discretionary consent. So yeah, that's the intention.
And is the reason that you're pitching it at the discretionary level, if a grower wants to expand into non-CVP land, is the reason you've done that because you're worried about a change in the risk of contaminants increasing?
Yes, in the sub-catchment levels, yes.
Yes. But have you seen the joint evidence of the water quality science that says there'll be a negligible change in contaminant load?
Yes.
At either the sub-catchment or FMU level?
Yes, I've seen that.
And you don't have a reason to doubt the correctness of that joint scientific position, do you?
I'm not satisfied that if rotation could occur anywhere in an FMU, and I think Mr. Scarsbrook said the same, that there wouldn't be some subcatchments where there is an additional concentration over time such that it's more likely to have at least higher nitrogen discharges, if not higher sediment as well. So I'm not satisfied from the water quality joint witness statement that that wouldn't happen. And that's why I believe it needs to be tested through a discretionary activity rule.
Well, but isn't your lack of satisfaction, doesn't it actually run contrary to what the actual scientists have all agreed?
Well, I don't think so, because I think their own, I understood anyway, that they admitted that there may be some subcatchments where there is an increase. I thought I saw that there, but I certainly heard Mr. Scarsbrook say that.
Well, can we go to the water quality joint witness statement, please? Question 49. And that may refresh your memory. Got that?
Yes.
And if we just deal with point one first, can you see the joint agreed position of the people who are in a position to offer evidence on it, that we expect that providing for crop rotation at the FMU scale would result in no net change in N load at FMU or sub-catchment scale over medium to long time scales, because the total area does not change. Before we move on to the other part of it, do you have any reason within your expertise to doubt the accuracy of what's said here?
That's assuming, I think.
If you can just say yes or no, and I'm happy for you to explain, but do you have any reason to doubt the accuracy of what the water scientists are telling us there?
I don't know. To be honest, I couldn't say yes or no. I see that's what they say. Yes.
And you accept that they are duly qualified water scientists?
Yes.
And you accept it's a joint position of all of them?
Yes.
And you're not a water quality scientist?
No.
So, being reasonable here, isn't this answer quite simple?
If the area of CVP is not increasing, yes. I see what they're saying, that and you're just kind of moving rotation around, so the total area is not increasing, then yes, I certainly accept that.
Even at the FMU scale?
Yes, probably.
Well, you say probably, but...
Well,
it actually is what the science is telling you on this occasion, isn't it?
That's what they're saying, yes.
And to be even-handed with the way you're dealing with vegetable growers and others, just like you said that over the last couple of days, well, you have to rely on the science... In those situations, I mean, isn't this just another time when you've got the experts telling you, hey, here's what the science is?
Yes, I hear that.
Yes, and do you accept it?
As written, yes. I accept number one, yes, as written.
Yes. And I think your evidence earlier was, well, hang on, I think they said there were some subcatchments where it would get worse, but doesn't point two say... that there is potential for localised impacts associated with concentration of CVP in some areas?
Yes.
And that doesn't refer to subcatchments at all, does it?
Well, it doesn't say that, but I don't know if it refers to that or not. I don't know if that's what they were thinking at the time.
Well, with respect, it's pretty clear, it's crystal clear, well, that it's not talking about subcatchments, isn't it?
It's not crystal clear to me. They're talking about certain areas, and areas can mean all sorts of things.
Right. But given that in the question above they've used the word subcatchment FMU, don't you think that if that's what they had in mind, then about 20 words later they'd probably have used those words if that's what they'd meant?
Perhaps.
Well, come on, sir.
I'm just saying perhaps.
Mr. Mitchell, I mean, I think you've gone through what the statement says. You've gone through issues of expertise. I think you're in a position now to make a submission.
Duly noted. Thank you, sir.
If I could, at some point, I'd like to just get a general overview of how I see these rules and why I think they need to be the way they are, the CVP.
That's open to your counsel to question
sure.
you about that
in
due course, but if I can keep on track for now,
sure.
That would be appreciated. So, given have you studied carefully the evidence of Mr. Wilcox?
No, I haven't studied it carefully.
Didn't think it was important to know as much as you could about.
There wasn't time to read everything thoroughly and study it carefully.
Okay, well, if you take it from me then, that one thing he explains is one factor that goes into how you rotate and the time over which you rotate and the area that you have to rotate across. One factor is the behaviour of different pathogens or what's in the soil. You can understand that?
Yes.
And would you take it again from me that another thing he talks about is vegetable growers undertake a significant amount of careful and long-term planning of how they're going to rotate, where, when, with whom.
Yes.
And well, and you know, well, and his evidence is or do you accept his evidence that actually you need to rotate at the FMU scale to deliver the full continuity that the crop rotation is all about?
Do I accept that you need to always rotate across a full FMU scale? Is that what you're asking me?
Yes.
Is that what he says? Because I assume that that's not always the case.
Or do you accept that that growers need to rotate across the FMU rather than the smaller sub-catchments?
I accept that there probably are situations where that's important.
Do you accept that that's the vast majority of situations?
I don't know if that's what he's saying, and he's the expert. I'll accept that, but I don't know that.
But can you detect a problem with coming here proposing restrictions in a planning sense about what vegetable growers can and can't do, and then just saying, well, I don't know what the situation on the ground is?
I can explain to you why the rules are set up in the way that they are.
But I presume, was that done in the absence of careful attention to the evidence of actual growers who are actually doing this?
No, I think the rules were set up through the hearing with a lot of evidence from the growers.
Well, if the evidence that this court accepts is that the growers are crying out for crop rotation at the FMU level, is that something you'd be prepared to support by changing the references and the rules to sub-catchments so that they say FMU?
No, I think the references are right how they are, and the rules don't prevent crop rotation across FMUs, but it would be a discretionary activity, consent.
Yes, so they don't allow it as a controlled activity.
That's right, and I can explain that if you would like me to.
Well, in the expansion rule that you're referring to, you've agreed, haven't you, to include a maximum number of hectares that it can expand to?
Yes.
1,877 hectares?
Yes.
And haven't you included in the current drafting of that rule a measure of that by reference to the FMU level?
Yes.
Well, so isn't what's good for the goose good for the gander? And if you're happy enough to say expansion can be measured by reference to FMU in some way, then surely you have to be content from a planning perspective that FMU may be no bad thing for the controlled rule either.
It needs to be tested through the discretionary rule. We're moving from what we're calling existing CVP as a controlled activity to expanding into other areas as a discretionary rule, and that to me is appropriate in terms of BC1.
Yes, but what I'm saying is a measure of expansion is at the FMU scale. And wouldn't you think that expansion would have the greater potential environmental effects rather than the existing CVP?
Yes.
And so if you're worried about measuring the environmental effects through a rule setting, then isn't it kind of unduly onerous to apply the smaller subcatchment for existing when you're happy to apply FMU for expanding?
I don't quite understand the question.
Well, the rule that you're putting forward for the expansion of CVP, right?
Yes.
That one is done by reference to the FMU scale. right?
There are limits set at the FMU scale, yes, for expansion.
Yes.
Yes.
And expansion, in your view, probably poses greater environmental potential risks than sticking to the same amount of CVP, doesn't it?
Yes.
And yet you're sticking to a more granular level of measurement for the thing that you think is less risky, aren't you? The existing CVP.
That's not how I see it. I mean, yes, I mean, you're right, in a sense, but what we're doing is we're saying the existing CVP, it's been happening all along, it's controlled. But expansion gives you potential to increase contaminants in some subcatchments, needs a stronger test.
And I hear what you're saying. I'm happy to hear what you're saying, that I'm right in one sense, but can you see how, if you're in the shoes of a grower reading these rules for the first time, didn't come to court for 6 weeks and listen to your careful elaborations of what you meant, it's important
I don't think you've said what it means. I haven't yet explained it. Why controlled indiscretion rule? I haven't yet explained that.
But even if you were to explain it today, can you take my point from a planning perspective that the rules need to be clear on a cold read to a person who doesn't have our knowledge?
Absolutely.
And so, can you see how a grower reading the rule might go, well, this is pretty unfair, because expansion, I'm allowed to think about it at the FMU level, but existing CVP, I have to go down to the detail of every single subcatchment.
No, I don't see why that's confusing.
I didn't ask if it was confusing. Don't you think that a grower would reasonably think that's unfair?
No, I don't think so. If they understand the point of existing versus expanded, I don't think they would see that as unfair.
Well, can we go to the existing CVP rule 3.11.4.5, please?
Yes.
And are you using the version amendments after expert conferencing?
Yes.
And is it fair to say that conditions 2 and 3 together are trying to provide a definition of what we mean by existing CVP?
Yes.
And in rough terms at least, is it right that what you've envisaged is first you identify your maximum hectareage of CVP in any single year between 2006 and 2016?
Yes.
And that's condition 2?
Yes. 2A.
And then is the second step in the process of defining existing CVP that you pick that top year?
Yes.
And you have to identify the maximum areas of land used for CVP, and you have to do that by subcatchment.
Yes.
And then clause 3, is that where the rule says, well, the total area within each of those subcatchments for your top year mustn't exceed those maximums?
That's right.
And so, in short, is that the two-step mechanism by which the rule defines what it means by existing CDP.
Yes, the way I understand it is that condition 2 describes what it means, what existing CDP is, and condition 3 says that can't be exceeded. Slightly different things.
And in all cases, it's at the sub-catchment level, isn't it, that we're doing this identification exercise?
That's right, and that's because the target attribute states are set at that level.
Bearing in mind what you now know about crop rotation, can you see any problem for my CVP growers with this two-part way that you've gone about it?
No.
Well, we know, don't we, that growers are rotating their crops very regularly, right?
Yes.
So even in your top year, that may well be a year where some of your subcatchments actually have a very small amount of hectareage of CVP.
That's right.
And yet, because of the second part of your two-part mechanism, the poor old grower is going to be restricted in that subcatchment to a very small hectareage.
That's right.
Well, isn't that... That hardly facilitates crop rotation for CVP, does it?
I feel that we're going round and round circles on the same question.
Yeah, okay. Mr. Metov, in terms of the words, you've identified the particular words in conditions 2 and 3.
Yes.
Is what you're putting to the witness that you say that those areas that have to be identified and then kept within,
yes,
do not include areas that may well be fallow in the particular year, but which are part of the cropping activity?
Not quite, sir. Can I use an example of the witness and that might flush
it? Well, I think it'd be really good to zero in on what you say is the restriction, because it seems to me that conditions 2 and 3 are about identifying areas, including total areas, and I'm just trying to work out where the restriction comes from.
So the restriction is that the most you can have per subcatchment is whatever each subcatchment had in that one biggest year.
All right, but isn't the problem with that whether you count a fallow area in that particular year or whether you say, well, it's fallow for cropping purposes, and can I still include it so that next year I can actually plant that area and leave one of my currently cropped areas fallow?
That may well be one problem, and we haven't, I don't think I've questioned the lips on that yet.
Oh, I see.
There's a separate problem,
yes,
which, can I illustrate it?
Yeah,
try and
illustrate
it this way, on a Friday afternoon. If you're a grower and you've got an operation and it's, say, 100 hectares, and say your operation's across two subcatchments. You
yes.
understand that situation?
Yes.
And you go through your 10 years, and your biggest year is this one, when you had this 100 hectares. Say in that year, one of your subcatchments, you only had 10 hectares of CVP, and in the other subcatchment, even though it's your biggest year, you had 90.
Yes.
The effect of your rule is the maximum you could ever do as a controlled activity in those two subcatchments is 10 in this one,
yes,
and 90 in this one, isn't it?
That's right.
And that's even though if you looked at the other 9 years, there might be a year where your total was only 80, but maybe it was split 40-40.
Yes.
And so can you see how growers are being restricted because they're limited to 10 hectares,
Yes.
Even though in the other lower years, that particular subcatchment allowed them to do 40 hectares,
yes.
Not just 10.
Yes.
And is that intentional or an oversight?
It's not an oversight.
But what did you sit down and think that I want to restrict existing CVP in this fashion?
Well, I mean, for a start, I wasn't one who originally wrote these rules, so those provisions are directly from the hearing panel.
Sure.
And, I mean, secondly,
what we're trying to do
is protect the water quality, achieve the objectives. We needed to have some way of identifying what we would call existing CVP, an area of existing CVP, there needed to be some way of doing that.
Yes.
And this was, at the time, seemed the best way of doing that. So, yes, there may be some collateral difficulties because of it, but we had to have some way of doing it, and that was what they settled on.
Sorry.
Please.
Mr. Trevilco, we've got 100 hectares across two subcatchments.
Yes.
There's 50 in each, all right? But in one of the 10 years, you've got 40 hectares in one subcatchment and 50 in the other.
Yes.
And then in the following year, you want to do 50 in the first subcatchment and 40 in the other.
Yes.
Are you saying that these rules would mean that by having nominated 50 in one and 40 in the other, you couldn't the following year do 40 in the first one and 50 in the second?
I am saying that, sir, as that seemed to be I don't know if it was the only one, but it was one of the ways of capping the area of CVP.
But, sorry, you start with 100 hectares owned by a particular...
Yes.
Cropping farmer.
Yes.
Isn't it just the same as looking at a dairy farmer and say, well, this year, they've got a farm, grazable area of 100 hectares. In one year, they've got, I don't know how many stock units would be on a dairy farm of that size, but let's say they've got 300 dairy cows. And the following year, for reasons completely of their own, they've got 250 dairy cows.
Yes.
But then the year after that, they'll get another 50 cows. They don't need consent to do that, do they?
No.
So why do you do it for the croppers?
Because this is about trying to achieve target attribute states in each of the subcatchments. We hear, and Rule 3749 has been set up because of this, that a change of any land use to CVP has significant
you're now dealing with a different situation. I've told you you're dealing with a cropping farmer who's got 100 hectares, 50 hectares in one subcatchment, 50 in the other. That is what they start with. They're not increasing that, but they are choosing to leave some of it fallow for one cropping period,
yes.
And then to replant it later. Now, I've got to say, as a judge, not as a farmer, I don't see that as any expansion. That appears to me to be their farming choice about how they use the land in a particular year on the basis that they have, under Rules 2 and 3 of, under Conditions 2 and 3 of Rule 311.4.5, already nominated to the council where their 100 hectares are.
My understanding is that it's not as straightforward as that because of rotation across some of the land that they own and some of the land that they lease, and that can change, you know, every year. So,
but they're rotating it within their farm.
Not necessarily. They're rotating it across some of their land and some leased land, is my understanding.
Well, if they were leasing it, they'd have to lease it from somebody who also had been using it for cropping.
Not necessarily.
Well, that's the difference with Rule
8. End of an
4.8, which is expansion of production within a subcatchment.
Yes.
So Rule 8 will catch them if they go to a dry stock farmer and say, you know, your river paddock would be excellent for my crop. Why don't I just go there? That's an expansion, and you need a discretionary consent under Rule 8. But if the person they're leasing it from has already been cropping there, and they say, oh, are you going to plant that in whatever, I don't know, maize or something like that, are you going to plant that? No, I'm not going to. Can I plant it? Yes, you can. From the water's point of view, the water sees no difference. The water sees a maize crop in that paddock. Right?
Yes.
So why are we controlling it for rotational purposes, whoever may own it?
There's got to be some way, though, of determining what do we call existing CUP?
So that's condition, two of Rule 5.
Yes.
That's how you do it.
Yes.
And you're going to fix it for some period, for a period that's already gone by, the 10 years leading up to the year of notification.
Yeah.
And that's what they're stuck with.
As a controlled activity.
Well, that's the marker for how much CVP land there is in the subcatchment. The amount used for CVP during that 10-year, or at the highest point during that 10-year period.
Yes. I still don't understand. I mean, to me, it's still important to have some amount of land, however we define it, some of amount of land where, at the date, by the date of notification, was CVP land or had been used for CVP land. There has to be some way of determining what that number is.
Well, that's condition two.
Yes, that's condition two. That's
so you've got that.
Yes. But so that has to be, I mean, whether there's a better way or not, I don't know.
Right.
But that has to show in some way for each subcatchment that was the existing total amount of CVP that could have happened on that catchment. I mean, we know that it's actually likely to be a lot more because different CVP operators are using different bits of land all the time. And so we don't know if they all choose different maximum years for CVP, then it's possible that we're double counting some of the land. But anyway, it's just a way of trying to determine a figure and what for each subcatchment.
Well, except that condition three will stop them from double counting, won't it? Because the total area can't exceed the maximum areas identified in condition two. But they've also got 10 years. They've got between 2006 and 2016 to nominate their largest area.
Their largest area, yes.
So I hear what you say. Things change year on year, but haven't you put 10 years in so that you cover that?
Each grower chooses their maximum year.
I understand that.
And so if they all choose different years and they're all moving land around, then the total amount, if under this rule, the total amount of CVP would actually be greater. If they all use the same year, chose the same year.
Well, it's not what you've nominated.
No, that's
right. It still appears to me that that's why condition three says you can't go above the maximum area identified in condition two.
That's right.
All right. Look, I'm just concerned, Mr. Mijatov. I thought I could cut through it. I'm not sure if I have or not. I'm just concerned there's a little bit of circularity coming into this, and I wonder if you've got some other things you want to press on with. It does, again, seem to me that you're in a position to make submissions about the wording of those rules. I hope when we get your submissions, you've got alternative wording that you can put in front of us.
Yes, well, I can perhaps do better than that. Mr. Trevelco, earlier, I think yesterday you said your justification for this particular way of defining the maximum area was it's the only way we can define what exists in CVP. Is Room saying that?
No, I don't remember.
Okay.
But if I did
and then today, yeah, you asked the question, thank you. But today, I think, to be fair to you, you said, well, it might be the only way, it's the only way that you can, that you've happened to have thought of. Is that fair?
It was the way that the panel concluded it, and
yep.
It seemed reasonable to me.
Well, I'll get to reasonableness later, but to be more constructive for now, given it's just one way of doing it, there's another way of doing it which solves some of the problems, the unintended collateral damage, as you call it. Isn't a solution to swap out the words at a sub-catchment level and insert the words at the FMU level? Because then at least the grower can expand within a bigger area, which is obviously fundamental to the whole idea of crop rotation. Isn't that another way of defining it?
No, sir.
Just what can't be done as a matter of plan.
No, but the problem is that if, let's say there was an FMU, a sub-catchment that had no and had never had CVP growing on it.
Yes.
And you're saying that existing CVP should be determined or defined as land as though that farmer could have grown on there. And I'm saying that's not existing CVP. That's for that sub-catchment, that's new.
Well, I put it to you then that, unfortunately, I think you've completely misunderstood crop rotation and CVP. What do you say about that?
Well, I don't believe that I have. But, you know, that's your decision.
Well, even if... So if the words were... If the limit of the maximum area was set at the FMU level, it would still achieve your goal, wouldn't it, of having a known maximum number that must not be exceeded.
At the FMU level, yes, but not the sub-catchment level.
Yes, but so you'd still have a maximum that if you wanted to enjoy controlled activity status, you'd have to take care not to exceed.
We're trying to prevent increasing contaminants at the sub-catchment level, not the FMU level, or both actually, but it needs to be sub-catchment level.
Well, both actually is actually the important part of your answer, isn't it?
If the target attribute states are set at the sub-catchment level.
It's the other thing you're trying to achieve in policy 3 is actually to you're trying to provide for flexibility in vegetable crop rotations on a multiple and or changing properties, aren't you?
Yes.
Yes. So don't you think that doing that at the FMU level still achieves that policy?
As I've explained, no, I don't think that.
Okay, well, what about policy 3A? Aren't you trying to enable existing CVP?
Yes.
And B, aren't you trying to provide for the expansion of CVP?
Yes.
And so can you really not see how setting it at this smaller sub-catchment level will have precisely the opposite effect?
No, can't see that.
Right. Do you know when a grower comes along to the council and applies for a consent, say for a controlled activity, is the consent going to refer in general to CVP?
What do you mean?
Well, is it just going to say the activity that's allowed is commercial vegetable production? Or is it going to say strawberries and lettuces?
No, I think it's going to say commercial beef production. I don't know. There may be conditions about different crops. I don't know.
But do you accept it would be sensible for the condition to be worded at the broader, pitch at the broader level,
probably.
CVP?
Yes, probably.
Is still within this control activity role. You know how we talked about the reality for growers, which is you're probably going to have to lease some of the land that you're doing CVP on.
Yes.
Could they use, in that situation, could a grower use the controlled activity rule at the end of the lease? Could they relinquish the consent and reapply again under the controlled activity rule for a different area where CVPs to occur? Still sticking to the hectareage limit. Could they do that?
Why would they do that?
Well, did you read the panel decision which explained that a problem for growers is if the consent's not relinquished, but you rotate on your merry way as you do, the landowner thinks, well, great, I've got a consent. I might do some CVP as well. And you can see how that's a potential problem for growers, can't you?
Yes.
And so isn't a solution to that, to ensure that your rules allow the grower to relinquish their consent, if it's on leased land, say, and then reapply for a different area of land?
Are you saying with a different,
well,
a different year or something with different maximums? Is that what you're saying?
So if we keep it simple, let's assume that the rules pass exactly as you've drafted them.
Yes.
So it would be on the same subcatchment, it would be your maximum year. In that subcatchment, you've got 40 hectares, say.
Yes.
But it's leased. And so your lease comes to an end, or, but because you need to rotate on to another property, is there anything in your rules preventing the grower from just relinquishing the consent, reapplying for the same number of hectares on this new parcel of land for the same amount of hectareage?
Nothing in the rules that stop that.
But is there anything to your knowledge that stops that?
Well, what I'm still not sure about is whether you're saying, are they going to choose a different set of subcatchments as being their so-called existing subcatchments or not? And I don't know if that's even possible to do that. I mean, you're right that if someone had a consent, there's nothing stopping them from relinquishing that consent, nothing stopping them for applying for another one. What information we may need to accompany that, I don't know. That would be up to the implementation guys.
Yes, but assuming they sit within their subcatchment and assuming the maximum isn't greater,
yes,
you're quite happy that, or you're quite confident that they'd be able to use the controlled activity rule repeatedly.
I haven't really thought that through, I have to be honest.
Mm.
In principle, I think you're right, but like I say, it would probably depend on the consent officer looking at that and the history of CVP operation by that grower and where it's happened and so on, in terms of what sort of information they might want to have to make sure from their point of view that it isn't expanding their existing.
Yes, but if they're sticking to the subcatchment, the same subcatchment, sticking to the same maximum in the biggest year in that subcatchment, there's not going to be any further discretion by this council officer.
It's a hypothetical situation.
Sure.
I don't know what we're really getting to on it at the moment.
Well, can you see that what my growers are getting to is they want reasonable confidence that these rules, which are apparently meant to be enabling and providing for what they do for a living, that in fact when they go to apply, that the rules are going to apply as they understood them to apply.
Sure.
Yeah. And I hear what you're saying about the role of information is going to be really important in that situation, isn't it?
Sure.
And the FEP would provide a good mechanism by which to update the council in that situation, wouldn't it?
Possibly, but I don't think the FEP necessarily would be asking for the sort of information that the consent officer may be aware of. I mean, that's really about what are the effects and how do you address them, isn't it?
Yes, but an FEP has to be updated as necessary to record all land being used for crop rotations, doesn't
yes,
it?
Yes, that's right.
And so that would be squarely the sort of tool you'd use as a responsible grower, isn't it?
Yes.
And just seeing if I can boil it down, Your Honour. Well, shall we talk? Shall we talk a bit about overseer?
Sure.
I know your evidence about removing overseer, and I just wanted to ask whether you considered that for commercial vegetable production in particular, did you think overseer posed any particular or special problems for CVP?
Yes, I think it does. Overseer is meant to be a long-term. It's meant to give a number that if things don't change over a number of years, that's the kind of leaching that you would expect. But we know with CVP things keep on changing, different crops, different rotations, so it always seemed to me to be a problem using overseer to come up with a nitrogen cap for CVP. But nevertheless, that was the original, and nobody actually appealed that. So that was just my thinking.
And apart from nitrogen, are you aware that overseer's modelling of phosphorus is crude in the way that it analyses and reports on the transfer of phosphorus?
That's my understanding. I've often asked, I've asked the experts on overseer, why don't we use phosphorus as a cap based on overseer? And they say it's just not really detailed enough. It's not modelled well enough.
Yeah, and the accuracy of the modelling hard to review, isn't it?
Mm.
And it's not well suited at all to reflect the fine scale of vegetable production systems.
No, in my understanding, it doesn't cover off all vegetable crops and things like that as well. So it always seemed to be problematic.
Yes, and you say it doesn't, but actually it's incapable, isn't it, of modelling the full range of healthy vegetables that I represent. Because it uses proxy crops instead, doesn't it?
I'm not sure how that works.
And long-term averaging
for
climatic data, for example.
Yes.
And you know it's not just Horticulture NZ who's got problems with overseer. It was the panel as well for CVP, wasn't it?
Yes, and like I say, I was surprised that it was still used and not appealed as a cap for nitrogen on CVP.
agree entirely with the panel's conclusion that there are very real issues with its use in the horticultural sector.
Absolutely.
And CVP in particular.
Absolutely.
We talked a little bit about the expansion rule, Rule 8, which I'm doing, which I'm referring to just to shave off a few extra numbers. So this is the discretionary activity rule for CVP expansion, isn't it?
Yep.
And a key control here is the farm, the FEP, isn't it?
Yes, the limit on the FEP. I mean, originally it was a limit on subcatchments, and originally the appeal from Hort NZ was to increase those limits at the subcatchment level. And now we've apparently decided that the subcatchment data isn't reliable enough to set targets, and my understanding is that's why we're going to the FMU level. Because this is quite different to the appeal.
Yes, but do you say apparently, because you're still a bit suspicious about the science on it?
It's not so much the science. I understand there needs to be some kind of cap on nitrogen. Cap on the area of CVP.
Yes.
I hear from the experts that we don't have good enough information at the subcatchment level now.
Yes.
To cap that at for existing CVP at the subcatchment level. Next best thing is the FMU level, yeah.
Okay, oh good. So when you said apparently you weren't trying to criticise the evidence on the number of hectares of expansion needed. Oh, thank you. Oh, that's a relief. So, the rules that you've set up, or have continued to support, means the CVP is either controlled or discretionary, right?
Yes.
And I think you've already accepted with others that the activity status of an activity indicates the stringency of the control. In the plan for that activity.
That's right.
And obviously permitted activity, the most permissive. And you worked your way up from there.
Yes.
Even I, not a veteran of this court, know that much. But you're aware also that the panel initially contemplated a restrictive discretionary status for expansion of CVP. Do you know that?
I can't remember if that's what they talked about in the decision report, but like I say, I wasn't at the hearing for most of it.
But you've read the report.
I've read the decision report.
Yes. You remember clearly paragraph 1596. No, I'm only kidding, but for the record, that's where it is. But, and if we compare what's being accepted by horticulture now, which is a discretionary for expansion, can you see how that's a relatively greater degree of control than some of the other activities we've been hearing about in court this week?
Yes.
So some existing sheep and beef farming is a permitted activity, some dairy is permitted,
yes.
Winter forage access is permitted, isn't it?
Yes.
Arable farming can be permitted. And even fruit growing of certain defined fruits is a permitted activity, isn't it?
Yes.
And we won't go there, but it's in the glossary, CVP is defined, isn't it?
Yes.
And it specifically excludes a whole bunch of fruit.
Yes.
Including, whatever. So, if we're looking at your plan as a whole, from a parity perspective,
yes.
You can see that CVP is treated more restrictively than a large range of other activities in the catchment as a whole.
Yes.
And that's even though it only contributes about 3% of the nitrogen load.
Yes.
And it's got particularly low E. coli rates.
Yes.
And it gets special recognition for its role. For fresh veggies' role in human and community health and well-being.
Yes.
So, what I'm putting to you is, given the relatively harsher treatment you're happy to give CBP, would you agree that the least you can do is make the rules workable for growers?
Well, I think they are workable for growers.
But if you went and carefully studied the grower evidence when you had a chance, if it turned out that they were saying, no, look, they're not workable, they're unduly restrictive, would you be prepared to accept their evidence on that?
That hypothetical to answer that one. Unduly restrictive in what way?
Well, unduly restrictive in making it too hard to do proper crop rotation.
I don't believe it is.
But you'd say that not having actually studied the analysis given by a dozen witnesses.
What I do know is
that right before you expand?
Sorry.
Is that right?
I have before you expand. Studied.
No.
No.
But you're happy to promote a set of rules that you're confident won't have practical deleterious effects for the growers.
I think the rules are set right.
Could your confidence be misplaced, given you haven't carefully studied what growers are actually telling you? Pardon?
It can always be misplaced.
Mm.
But my understanding, it's a movement of land from any land use to CBP has been identified as a land use change that has potential to increase contaminants. CBP is the only kind of operator, land use operator, who doesn't have to go through a non-complying activity rule to move a piece of land from, say, dairy to CBP or sheep and beef to CBP or whatever. CBP is the only one who are able to do that as a discretionary rather than a non-complying activity rule. So it's an easier road for that. The reason that I accept an easier road is that it's a very limited ability to expand. So it's a known amount. So that's why I think it's discretionary is better than non-complying for that situation.
But it could equally be said, couldn't it, that they're also the only ones who have a discretionary path rather than a restricted or permitted path. Well, even high-risk dairy farms, really restricted discretionary.
Yes,
isn't it?
For land use change that would otherwise be non-compliant, yes.
Well, touching on what you said an answer ago, that you're content that a limited expansion of CBP is appropriate. Is that a fair summary of your answer?
Yes.
And your basis for that was Horticulture NZ's calculations, wasn't it?
A number of bases. I set the arguments that were made by Horticulture NZ that a lot of their land has been gone to urban development.
Yeah.
So, and they do need to expand. We know that. I accept the fact that demand for vegetables is growing. I accept and certainly have heard Minister Parker's concerns about the ongoing supply of CBP. All of those reasons would suggest to me that it's reasonable to have an allowance for limited expansion of CBP.
But there's another thing that went into the mix, the calculation of horticulture's experts.
Yes, exactly. They tell me you need this much.
Yes, 1,877 hectares.
Yeah. Well, I don't have any other evidence but that to go on.
Yes, and is this another example where I think you said a couple of days ago, I have to take my leave from the scientists. I don't know what should be done and shouldn't be done. Remember saying that?
Yes.
And so, quite responsibly, you're the planner, not the scientist. The scientist, unchallenged evidence is, we need this much at a minimum.
That's
so you've appropriately popped that number in to the expansion rule, right?
Yes.
But there's one topic, at least, where you don't seem to accept the science from horticulture, and that's the topic of rotating across the FMU, isn't it?
I accept that there is a need at times to rotate across an FMU.
And as part of thinking about whether expansion of the FMU level is appropriate, have you taken into account the agreement of the scientists that where CVP expansion occurs in place of pastoral land, we expect a reduction in E. coli losses to local water bodies? Did that go into your consideration before you gave evidence today?
Yeah.
And having now got the considerable benefit of that joint witness statement, would you say you're more satisfied than you were before that JWS came in that expanding CVP is acceptable?
My understanding was they were saying, providing the total amount of land under CVP doesn't expand, then rotation within the current amount won't increase the contaminant. So that's my understanding of what they were saying.
Yeah, but they're also saying, like the E. coli example we just went through, that if you're replacing that kind of activity, then actually you're going to have benefits to contaminant too.
Sure.
And so does that make you more, less, or exactly the same amount of satisfied about the acceptability of CVP expansion? Does hearing that make you feel more inclined to support CVP expansion?
Doesn't change it, in my view.
Right.
I mean, I accept that that's an advantage of it, and it needs to be brought into the mix in any consent application, yes.
Well, if you are accepting all these things, then I'm putting it to you that you actually don't need to be as restrictive as your plan continues to be, do you?
Yes, I do need to be as restrictive.
Okay.
As the plan is.
And finally, as they say, looking to the future, you're aware of obviously about the NBEA.
Yes.
And you know that, among other things, it says that the National Planning Framework is going to have to include content that provides direction on enabling supply of fresh fruit and vegetables. If you know, that's what the Act
I'm
says.
I'm only vaguely aware of that, I'm afraid. I haven't read the NBA. I read some initial stuff, but during the time that was coming out, I was busy doing other things. So I haven't read the NBA.
Were they more important things than
getting
the regulatory settings right for the
NBA? No, there are more important, more immediate things in terms of preparing evidence for this court.
Right. But you're an experienced planner, so when you hear the word enabling the supply of fresh fruit and vegetables, you think that's pretty promoting language, isn't it?
Yeah, I accept that it's needed.
So do you accept that PC1, as you're promoting it, is more restrictive than the incoming legislation seems to indicate as desirable?
I don't know enough detail about what it says.
Well,
I'm assuming it's not enabling at all costs, but I don't know. I haven't read it.
I think venturing into what the new legislation will require, when unless you've got something to point me to, our determination will still need to be made under the Resource Management Act. We might
move on. Yeah. No, it was the signal that the legislature sent.
Well,
was all I was. Similarly, with the MPSFM 2020, you're aware that provides for these things called SVGAs.
Yes.
And they're particular vegetable growing areas, aren't they?
Yes.
Kokokoe is one such area, isn't it?
Yes.
And do you know that under that MPS, at least for Pukekohe, I guess in this case, a regional council must have regard to the importance of the contribution of that SVGA to the domestic supply of fresh vegetables and to maintaining food security? priority for New Zealanders.
Yes.
Did you do that before saying you stand by PC1 as...
Yes.
You did?
Yes.
Did you write that down somewhere?
No.
Well, could it be that you haven't sufficiently had regard to the importance of fresh fruit and vegetables when you've set your regulatory settings?
Well, I think we have had regard, as did the hearing panel, and they're very clear on that.
And so by you reading the hearing panel, are you saying, well, I must have had regard to it too?
Well, I think that they appropriately had regard to the need to be able to expand CBP.
And you, but by reading that report, is that why you say, I did too?
Well, reading the report and everything else...
I'm not sure that those sorts of questions to a witness of this kind is going to assist us. You've made your points about the text of the plan change and what you say should be in there. As I have said before, I think you've got a reasonable basis now for making submissions.
Okay.
I don't think that pursuing this issue about...
Having regard to?
Well...
All right.
The issue would be, for a witness of this kind, pointing to text and then pointing to the national policy statement and saying, does this language give effect to that provision of the NPX? Now, what we have is a controlled activity rule for existing vegetable production, commercial vegetable production, and there'd be a number of people who would say that on the basis that that activity has to get consent, it is being enabled. Again, if you want to go further, I think that's a matter for
submission. Thank you.
Do you have any other planning questions to put to this planning?
No, not many, and definitely can finish in a couple of minutes.
All right. By a couple, you mean two?
Well, 5 minutes.
Well, we'll take a break.
All right.